Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Moon, Moo, and You, the Collective Wisdom. Dee Dee Delaney is on our show this evening and doing the one-man show of the Christmas Carol. He will play every role. He did the show last year here on this radio show, and we loved every minute. Delaney has another show to do after this one at a local theater, so he has to run right after this show is over. But we will, be very happy to listen to the show again. So joining me now is Joan Adams.
And good afternoon, Kate. How
and
exciting.
Delaney's already on the line, and his, our dear friend Joel is on the other line. I'm just muting you out, Joel, just so there's little extraneous noises. So welcome, Delaney.
Thank you.
And go right ahead with your thing. We appreciate it.
Okay. You can hear me well?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
All right. This is the concise Dickens Christmas Carol. Charles Dickens wrote it, and I condensed it. Okay. Once upon a time, of all the good days in the year, on Christmas Eve, old Scrooge sat busy in his counting house. It was cold, bleak, biting weather, foggy withal. The city clocks had only just gone three, yet it was quite dark already, and candles were flaring in the windows of the neighboring offices like ruddy smears upon the palpable brown air. A Merry Christmas, Uncle. God save you. It was the voice of Scrooge's nephew. Humbug. Christmas a humbug, Uncle? Oh, you don't mean that, I'm sure. I do. Merry Christmas. What right have you to be merry? What reason have you to be merry? You're poor enough. Well, come then, Uncle. What right have you to be dismal? What reason to be morose? You're rich enough. Humbug. Don't be cross, Uncle. What else can I be when I live in such a world of fools as this? Merry Christmas. Out upon Merry Christmas. What's Christmas to you but a time for paying bills without money? A time for finding yourself a year older, but not an hour richer. A time for balancing your books and finding every item in 'em through a round dozen of months presented dead against you. Oh, Merry Christmas. If I could work my will, every idiot who goes about with Merry Christmas on his lips should be boiled in his own pudding and buried with a stake of holly through his heart. He should. Uncle, nephew, you keep Christmas in your way and let me keep it in mine. But you don't keep it. Well, let me leave it alone then. Much good may it do you. Much good has it ever done you. Oh, come, Uncle, dine with us tomorrow. I'll see you in hell first. But why? I want nothing from you. I ask nothing of you. Why cannot we be friends? Good afternoon. I am sorry with all my heart to find you so resolute, but I will keep my Christmas humor to the last. So, a Merry Christmas to you, Uncle.
Good afternoon.
And a Happy New Year.
Good afternoon.
His nephew left the room without an angry word, stopping at the outer door to bestow the greetings of the season upon the clerk, who, cold as he was warmer than Scrooge, for he returned them cordially. And in letting Scrooge's nephew out, let two other people in. They were portly gentlemen, pleasant to behold, and stood now with their hats off in Scrooge's office.
Scrooge and Marley's, I believe. Have I the pleasure of addressing Mr. Scrooge or Mr. Marley?
Mr. Marley has been dead these 7 years. He died 7 years ago this very night.
Oh, well, I have no doubt his liberality is well represented by his surviving partner.
Liberality?
At this festive season of the year, Mr. Scrooge, it is more than usually desirable that we should make some slight provision for the poor and destitute who suffer greatly at the present time. Many thousands are in want of common necessaries. Hundreds of thousands are in want of common comforts, sir.
Are there no prisons?
Well, yes, plenty of prisons.
And the union workhouses, are they still in operation?
They are. Still, I wish I could say they were not.
The treadmill and the poor law are in full vigor, then?
Both very busy, sir.
Oh. Why, I was afraid, from what you said at first, that something had occurred to stop them in their useful course. I am very glad to hear it.
Well, under the impression that they scarcely furnish Christian cheer of mind and body to the multitudes, a few of us are endeavoring to raise a fund to provide the poor with meat and drink and means of warmth. We choose this time because it is a time of all others when want is keenly felt and abundance rejoices. So, what may I put you down for?
Nothing.
Oh, you wish to remain anonymous?
I wish to be left alone. Since you ask me what I wish for, gentlemen, that is my answer. I don't make merry myself at Christmas, and I can't afford to make idle people merry. I support the establishments I have mentioned. They cost enough, and those who are badly off must go there.
But many can't go there.
And many would rather die.
Well, if they would rather die, they had better do it. Decrease the surplus population. Besides, it's not my business. It's enough for a man to understand his own business and not to interfere with other people's. Mine occupies me constantly.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. At length, the hour for shutting up the counting house arrived. With an ill will, Scrooge admitted the fact to the expectant clerk, who instantly snuffed out his candle and put on his cap.
You'll want the whole day tomorrow, I suppose.
Oh, it's quite convenient, sir.
Oh, it's not convenient, and it's not fair. If I was to stop half a crown on it, you'd think yourself ill-used, I'll be bound. But you don't think me ill-used when I pay a day's wages for no work.
Oh, it's only once a year, sir.
A poor excuse for picking a man's pocket every 25th of December. But I suppose you must have the whole day. Be here all the earlier next morning.
Oh, yes, sir. Thank you, sir. A merry... Good evening, sir. Scrooge took his melancholy dinner in his usual melancholy tavern, and having read all the newspapers and beguiled the rest of the evening with his banker's book, went home to bed. He lived in a gloomy suite of rooms which once belonged to his deceased partner in an old and dreary building up a yard so dark, for nobody lived there but Scrooge, that even he was fain to grope with his hands. The fog and frost so hung about the black old gateway. Now, it is a fact that there was nothing at all particular about the knocker on Scrooge's door, except that it was very large. Let it also be borne in mind that Scrooge had not bestowed one thought upon Marley since his last mention of his 7-year dead partner that afternoon. Then let any man explain to me, if he can, how it happened that Scrooge, having his key in the lock of the door, beheld not a knocker, but Marley's face. As Scrooge gazed fixedly upon this phenomenon, it was a knocker again. To say that he was not startled would be untrue, but he walked in, lighted his candle, and though he did at first look cautiously on the back of the door, finding nothing, said, "Phew!" And closing the door with a bang, he walked across the hall and up the stairs to his rooms, where, contrary to his custom, he locked, nay, he double-locked himself in. He took off his cravat, put on his dressing gown and his slippers and his nightcap, and sat down by the fire to take his gruel. Presently, he heard a clanking noise deep down below, as if some person were dragging a heavy chain across the casks in the wine merchant's cellar. The cellar door flew open. He heard the noise in the floors below, then coming up the stairs, then coming straight through his door. The same face, the exact same. Marley in his pigtail waistcoat tights and boots, but transparent, so that Scrooge, looking through the waistcoat, could see the two buttons on the coat behind. The chain he drew wound about him like a tail made of cash boxes, keys, padlocks, ledgers, deeds, and heavy purses wrought of steel. How now? What do you want with me? Much. Who are you?
In life, I was your partner, Jacob Marley.
No, no, it's humbug. Humbug, I tell you.
You don't believe in me.
No, I don't. They come to me.
It is required of every man that the spirit within him walk abroad among his fellows and travel far and wide. And if that spirit goes not forth in life, it is condemned to do so after death. Of cannot share, but might have shared on earth, and turn to happiness.
You are fettered. Tell me why.
I wear the chain I forged in life. I made it link by link and yard by yard. I girded it on of my own free will, and of my own free will I wore it. Is its pattern strange to you? Or would you know the weight and length of the mighty coil you bear yourself? It was full as heavy and as long as this 7 Christmas Eves ago. You have labored on it since. Ebenezer, it is a ponderous chain.
Oh, Jacob. Oh, Jacob Marley. Tell me more. Speak comfort to me, Jacob.
I have none to give. Only a very little more is permitted me. I cannot rest. I cannot stay. I cannot linger anywhere. My spirit never walked beyond our counting house. Now mark me. In life, my spirit never roves beyond our narrow money-changing hole. And weary journeys lie before me.
But, Jacob, you were always a good man of business. Apparition walked backwards towards the window, which raised itself at each approaching step and floated out upon the bleak, dark night air, filled with phantoms, crying piteously in lamentation and remorse. Every one of them wore chains. Many had been personally known to Scrooge. The misery with them all was that they sought to interfere for good in human matters and had lost that power forever. The spirit voices faded together, and the night became as it had been.
Scrooge closed the window. He tried to say, hum, but stopped after the first syllable. And being much in need of repose, he went to bed without undressing and fell asleep upon the instant. When Scrooge awoke, it was so dark that looking out from bed, he could scarcely distinguish the transparent window from the opaque walls of his chamber. He was endeavoring to pierce the darkness with his ferret eyes when the chimes of a neighboring church struck the hour with a deep, dull, hollow, melancholy one. Immediately, light flashed up in the room, and Scrooge found himself face to face with a child? Or was it an old man? Yet the face had not a wrinkle in it, and from the crown of its head there sprung a clear, bright jet of light. Are you the spirit whose coming was foretold to me? I am. I am the ghost of Christmas past. Long past? Your past. Take heed. Rise and walk with me.
Oh, but I am mortal and liable to fall.
Bear but a touch of my hand on your heart, and you shall be held up in more than this. As the words were spoken, Scrooge stood upon an open country road with fields on either hand. It was a cold, clear winter day with snow upon the ground. Good heavens, why, I was a boy here. Your lip is trembling, and what is that upon your cheek?
A pimple. Lead where you will.
Scrooge recognized every gate and post and tree, and the little market town with its bridge, its church, and its winding river. And those boys on the backs of shaggy ponies trotting towards them now. He knew them. He could name every one as they called out to one another, Merry Christmas! Merry Christmas! Parting at crossroads and byways for their several homes. Why did his cold eye glisten and his heart leap up as they passed? Why was he filled with gladness? Merry Christmas! Out upon Merry Christmas! What good had it ever done him? These are but shadows of things that have been. They have no consciousness of us. Traveling now on a well-remembered lane, they soon approached a mansion of dull red brick. The school is not quite deserted.
I know it.
Solitary child, neglected by his friends, is left there still. And in a long, bare, melancholy room, made barer still by lines of plain deal desks, a lonely boy sat reading by a feeble fire. Scrooge wept to see his poor, forgotten self as he had used to be. The door opened, and in darted a little girl, throwing her arms about his neck. Fan,
brother, dear, dear brother, I've come to bring you home.
Home?
Yes, home, forever and ever. Oh, father is so much kinder than he used to be that home is like heaven. He spoke to me so dearly one dear night as I was going to bed that I was not afraid to ask him once more if you might come home. And he said yes, and you are never to come back here. And we shall be together all the Christmas long and have the merriest time in the world.
Oh, you're quite a woman, little fan. A delicate creature, whom a breath might have withered. But she had a large heart.
So she had.
She died a woman and had, as I think, children.
One child.
True. Your nephew, Fred.
Yes.
Let us see another Christmas. Now they were on the busy thoroughfares of the city, where shadowy passengers passed and repassed, and where it was made plain enough by the dressings in the shops that here, too, it was Christmas time again. The spirit stopped at a certain warehouse door. You know this place? What? Was I apprenticed here?
Yo-ho there! Yo-ho, my boys! No more work tonight!
Why, it's old Fezziwig. Bless his heart, it's Fezziwig alive again.
Christmas Eve, Dick! Christmas Eve, Ebenezer! Clear away, lads! Let's have plenty of room here! Hilly-ho, Dick! Cheer up, Ebenezer!
It was done in a moment. The floors swept, the lamps trimmed, fuel heaped upon the fire, and the warehouse made as snug and warm and dry and bright a ballroom as you would desire to see upon a winter's night. In came a fiddler with his music book. In came Mrs. Fezziwig, one vast, substantial smile. In came the three Miss Fezziwigs, and in came the six young followers whose hearts they broke. In came all the young men and women employed in the business. In came the housekeeper with her cousin, the baker. In came the cook with... with the milkman. In came the boy from across the way behind the girl from next door. In they all came, one after another, some shyly, some boldly, some awkwardly, some gracefully. In they all came, anyhow and everyhow. There were dances and more dances. There was cake. There were great pieces of cold roast and cold boiled. There were mince pies and plenty of beer. A small matter to make these silly folks so full of gratitude. Small, is it not? He has spent but a few pounds of your mortal money, 3 or 4 perhaps.
Well, It isn't that, Spirit. No, it isn't that. Well, he has the power to render us happy or unhappy, to make our service light or burdensome, a pleasure or a toil. Say that his power lies in words and looks, in things so slight and insignificant it is impossible to add or count them up. Well, what then? The happiness he gives is quite as great as if it cost a fortune.
What's the matter?
Oh, no, nothing.
Something, I think.
No, I should like to be able to say a word or two to my clock just now. That's all.
My time grows short. Quick! Once again, Scrooge saw himself. Older now, a man in the prime of life. He was not alone, but stood by the side of a fair young girl, in whose eyes there were tears. It matters little. Another idol has displaced me.
What idol, Belle?
A golden one. I have watched your nobler aspirations fall off one by one, until the master passion, gain, engrosses you. Have I not?
Well, even if I have grown so much wiser, what then? I'm not changed toward you, am I?
You are changed. When our contract was made, you were another man.
I was a boy.
Tell me, if this had never been between us, would you seek me out and try to win me now? Ah, no.
You think not?
If you were free today, can even I believe that you would choose a dowerless girl, you who weigh everything by gain? Or in choosing her, do I not know that your regrets would surely follow? I do.
and I release you with a full heart for love of him you once were. May you be happy in the life you have chosen.
Bell! Spirit, show me no more. Conduct me home. Why do you torture me?
I told you. These are shadows of things that have been. They are what they are. Do not blame me.
I cannot bear it. Leave me. Take me back. Haunt me no more.
And seizing the ghost, Scrooge wrestled it down with all his force, but he could not hide its light, which streamed forth in an unbroken flood upon the floor. And suddenly, conscious of being back in his own bedroom and overcome with an irresistible exhaustion, he reeled onto his bed and sank into a heavy sleep. Awakening in the middle of a prodigiously tough snore, Scrooge felt he was restored to consciousness at the right nick of time for the especial purpose of holding a conference with the second of the messengers dispatched through Jacob Marley's intervention. Ebenezer Scrooge! Come in! Come in and know me better, man! And there, upon the couch, clothed in one simple deep green robe, a holly wreath upon his head, sat a jolly giant, glorious to behold, who bore a glowing torch and held it high up to shed its light upon Scrooge.
I am the ghost of Christmas present. Look upon me. Why, you have never seen the likes of me before.
Never. Oh, Spirit, conduct me where you will. And if you have aught to teach me, let me profit by it.
Here, touch my robe.
Instantly the room vanished, and they stood upon the city streets on Christmas morning, where jovial people full of glee scraped the snow from their pavements and from the housetops, calling out to one another, and now and then exchanging a facetious snowball.
Ha, ha, gotcha.
The poulter shops were still half open. The fruiterers radiant in their glory. People emerging from scores of by streets, lanes, and nameless turnings carried their dinners to the baker shops for cooking, while the steeple bells called all in their best clothes and gayest faces to church and chapel. Perhaps it was the good spirit's sympathy with all poor men that led him straight to Scrooge's clerks, and in came Bob Cratchit, his threadbare clothes darned up and brushed to look seasonable, and Tiny Tim upon his shoulder. Alas for Tiny Tim, he bore a little crutch and had his limbs supported by an iron frame. And how did little Tim behave? Asked Mrs. Cratchit.
Oh, as good as gold and better.
Somehow he gets thoughtful, sitting by himself so much. Thinks the strangest things you ever heard. He told me, coming home, that he hoped the people saw him in the church because he was a cripple, and it might be pleasant for them upon Christmas Day to remember who made lame beggars walk and blind men see.
Ah, but what a bustle ensued then.
Master Peter, accompanied by the two young Cratchits, boy and girl, set off to fetch the goose, returning with it in high procession. Bob, turning up his cuffs, compounded some hot mixture in a jug with gin and lemons and set it on the hob to simmer. Mrs. Cratchit made the gravy. Master Peter mashed the potatoes. Belinda sweetened up the applesauce. Martha dusted off the hot plates. The two young Cratchits set chairs for everybody. And grace was said, succeeded by a breathless pause as Mrs. Cratchit, looking slowly along the carving knife, plunged it into the goose breast and out gushed the long-expected stream of stuffing. Ha, ha, ha! Hurrah! Never had there been such a goose. Its tenderness, its flavor, its, well, its size, but its cheapness. A Merry Christmas to us all, my dears. God bless us.
God bless us, everyone!
Spirit, tell me if Tiny Tim will live. I see a vacant seat and a crutch without an owner, carefully preserved. If these shadows remain unaltered by the future, the child will die.
Oh, no, kind spirit. Say he will be spared.
If these shadows remain unaltered by the future, none other of my race will find him here. But what then? If he be like to die, he had better do it and decrease the surplus population, huh? By this time, it was getting dark, and Scrooge and the spirit were again upon their travels. Much they saw, and far they went, and many homes they visited. It was a long night, and strange, too, for while Scrooge remained unaltered in his outward form, Spirit, your hair, it's turned gray. You've grown old. Are Spirit's life so short?
My time upon this globe is very brief. It ends tonight.
Tonight?
At midnight. Ah, the time is drawing near.
Spirit, forgive me, but I see something strange, not belonging to yourself, protruding from beneath your skirts. Is it a claw?
It might be a claw, for all the flesh there is upon it. Look here, man. Look.
And from the foldings of its robe, the spirit brought forth two children, a boy and a girl, ragged, shriveled, pinched, and menacing.
Are they yours?
They are man's.
This boy is ignorance. This girl is want. Beware them both and all of their degree, but most of all beware this boy, for on his brow I see that writ which is doom unless the writing be erased. Deny it, slander those that tell it thee, and abide the end.
But have they no refuge or resource?
Are there no prisons?
Are there no workhouses? Are there no prisons? Are there no workhouses? Are there no prisons? Are there no workhouses?
Scrooge, lifting up his eyes, beheld a solemn phantom, draped and hooded, coming like a mist along the ground toward him. No. No, no. I'm in the presence of the ghost of Christmas yet to come. Well, you are about to show me shadows of things that have not yet happened, but will happen in the time before us. Is that so, Spirit? Oh, ghost of the future, I fear you more than any specter I have seen. But as I know your purpose is to do me good, and as I hope to live to be another man from what I was, I am prepared to bear your company, and to do it with a thankful heart. Oh, will you not speak to me? Very well. Lead on. Lead on. The night is waning fast, and it is precious time to me, I know. Lead on. Although Scrooge was well used to ghostly company by this time, the mysterious presence, shrouded in its deep black garment with nothing visible save one outstretched hand, filled him with a solemn dread. His legs trembled beneath him, and he could hardly stand as he prepared to follow, borne up, it seemed, and carried along in the shadow of its dress, until in an instant the heart of the city sprang up around them, and they were among merchants who hurried up and down and chinked the money in their pockets and looked at their watches and trifled with their great gold seals. Why, I know these men. They are men of business, wealthy, important men. But I do not see my own image in its accustomed place among them. The ghost pointed to one little knot of businessmen who stood conversing in a group.
Well, I don't know much about it either way. I only know he's dead.
Oh, when did he die?
Last night, I believe.
Well, I thought he'd never die.
It's likely to be a very cheap funeral, for upon my life, I don't know anybody to go to it.
Well, suppose we make up a party and volunteer.
I don't mind going if lunch is provided, but I must be fed.
Spirit, of whom did they speak?
Well, I can think of no one immediately connected to myself to whom this... But no doubt there is some latent moral here to help my own improvement.
The phantom stood beside him, dark and quiet. Yet Scrooge fancied that the unseen eyes looked at him keenly, and he shuddered and went cold. They left this busy scene then for an obscure part of town, where the straggling streets were foul and narrow, the shops and houses wretched, the people half-naked, drunken, slipshod, ugly, for the whole quarter reeked of crime and filth and misery. Here, in this resort of infamous repute, where Scrooge had never before penetrated, he and the phantom entered a low-browed beetling shop, where a gray-haired rascal sat by a charcoal stove made of bricks among the wares in which he dealt, old rags and bottles, scales and weights, and refuse iron of all sorts. A woman slunk into the office then, bearing a heavy bundle which she threw upon the floor.
Well, don't stand there staring like you was afraid, old Joe. Every person has a right to take care of themselves. He always did. Now open that bundle and let me know the value of it.
What do you call this? Bed curtains? Oh, you don't mean to say you took them down, rings and all, with him lying there?
Yes, I do, and why not? Don't drip lamp oil on them blankets now.
These blankets?
Well, whose else's do you think? Oh, we isn't likely to take cold without him, I dare say. Now, you may look through that shirt till your eyes ache. You won't find a hole in it nor a threadbare place. They'd have wasted it if it hadn't been for me.
What do you call wasting of it?
Putting it on them to be buried in. Someone was fool enough to do it, but I took it off him again.
He was born to make your fortune. Here, here's your account. Ask me for another penny, I'll knock off half a crown. I always give too much to the ladies. It's a weakness of mine, and that's how I ruins myself.
This is the end of it, you see. He frightened everyone away from him when he was alive to profit us when he was dead.
Spirit, I see. I see. The case of this unhappy man might be my own. My life tends that way now. The scene changed. Now Scrooge stood in a darkened room beside a bare, uncurtained bed on which there lay a body of a man covered so carelessly in a ragged sheet that the motion of a finger would have disclosed the face. Oh, Spirit, this is a fearful place. In leaving it, I shall not leave its lesson. Trust me, let us go. But the Spirit stood unmoved, pointing down at the dead man's head with a steady hand. No! I understand you, and I would do it if I could, but I have not the power, Spirit. I have not the power. Is there not a person in the town who feels emotion caused by this man's death? The phantom spread its dark robe before him like a wing, withdrawing it a moment later to reveal a room by daylight where a young woman walked anxiously up and down until, hearing a knock at the door, she hurried to let in a man with a most remarkable expression on his otherwise serious, careworn face. Well, what is the news? Is it good or bad? Bad, but there is hope yet. If he relents, there is. He's past relenting. He's dead. Thank God! Oh, forgive me. To whom will our debt be transferred? I don't know. But by that time, we shall be ready with the money. We may sleep tonight with light hearts, Caroline. The only emotion you can show me is pleasure. Oh, let me see some tenderness connected with the death. The ghost conducted him through several streets until they entered Bob Cratchit's house. They found Bob seated with his family around the fire. I wish you could have gone, my dears. It would have done you good to see how green a place it is. But you shall see it often. I promised him I would walk there on a Sunday. My child, my little child. Don't be grieved, Father. However and whenever we part from one another, I'm sure we shall never forget our poor tiny Tim, now shall we? And I know, when we recollect how patient and how mild he was, though just a little, little child, we shall not quarrel easily among ourselves. Never, Father, never. I am very happy. Very happy. Spectre, something informs me that our parting moment is at hand. I know it, yet I know not how. Tell me what man that was whom we saw lying dead. The ghost conveyed him as before until they reached an iron gate. Churchyard? Well, it is a worthy place. The ghost stood among the graves, overrun by grass and weeds, and pointed down to one. Spit it before I draw near there. Answer me. Are these the shadows of things that will be? Or are they the shadows of what may be only? Well, spirits' voices, men's courses foregone certain ends, but if the courses be departed from, the ends will change. Say,
it is so.
But the ghost stood immovable, pointing down at that one grave. Scrooge crept toward it, and following the finger, read upon the stone, Ebenezer Scrooge. Oh, no, oh, no, oh, no. Oh, did it hear me? I am not the man I was. I will not be that man. Why are you showing me this? Am I a past all hope? Pity me. Assure me that I may yet change. I will honor Christmas in my heart and try to keep it all the year. I will live in the past, the present, and the future. The spirits of all three shall strive within me. I will not shut out the lessons that they teach. Tell me I may sponge away the writing on this stone, please, spirit. A bedpost. My own bedpost. My own bed. My room. Time. Time before me. My own time to make amends in. Oh, Jacob Marley. May Christmas be praised for this. I say it on my knees, oh Jacob, on my knees. Oh, look, they are not torn down rings at all. They are here. I am here. The shadows of what might have been may be dispelled. Well, they will be. I know they will. I don't know what to do. I'm as light as a feather. I'm as happy as an angel. I am as merry as a schoolboy. I am as giddy as a drunken man. A Merry Christmas to everybody. A Happy New Year to all the world. It's all right. It's all true. Oh, it all happened. I don't know what day of the month it is. I don't know how long I've been with the spirit. I don't know anything. I'm quite a baby. Well, never mind. I'd rather be a baby. Scrooge ran to the window, threw it open, put out his head. Golden sunlight, heavenly sky, sweet fresh air, merry bells. Oh, glorious. Glory! Oh, hello down there. What's today, my boy? Christmas Day? Oh, then I haven't missed it. The spirits have done it all in one night.
Well, of course they can do anything they like, can't they?
Hello, my fine fellow. Do you know the Poulters in the next street at the corner?
You do? Oh, what an intelligent boy. A remarkable boy. It's a pleasure to talk to him.
Do you know if they've sold the prize turkey hanging up there, the big one?
It is.
Well, go and buy it.
No, no, I am in earnest. Go and buy it.
Yes, bring the man back here. I'll give you a shilling. Bring him back in under 5 minutes. I'll give you half a crown.
I'll send it to Bob Cratchit. He shan't know who sent it. It's twice the size of Tiny Tim.
He dressed himself all in his best and got out into the street. Good morning. Good morning.
Merry Christmas.
But he had not gone very far when he saw coming toward him one of the two portly gentlemen who had walked into his counting house the day before.
My dear sir, how do you do? I hope you were successful yesterday. It was very kind of you. Merry Christmas to you, sir.
Mr. Scrooge?
Yes, that is my name, and I fear it may not be pleasant to you. Allow me to ask your pardon, and if you please.
Lord bless me. Are you serious?
Not a farthing less.
A great many back payments are included in it, I assure you. I don't know what to say.
No, don't say anything. I am much obliged to you. Bless you. Now come see me. Yes.
He went to church, and he walked about the streets, and he watched the people. He patted little children on the head and questioned beggars. He looked down into kitchens and up into windows and found that everything could yield him pleasure. In the afternoon, he turned his steps toward his nephew's house.
He must have passed that door a dozen times before he had the courage to go up and knock.
Bob, Fred, it's I. Your Uncle Scrooge, I've come to dinner. Will you let me in?
Oh, let him in. It's a mercy he didn't shake his arm off. He was at home in 5 minutes. Oh, wonderful party. Wonderful games. Wonderful unanimity. Wonderful happiness.
Ah, but he was early at the office the next morning. If only he could catch Bob Cratchit coming in late. That's what he had his heart set upon. And he did. Oh, yes, he did. The clock struck 9.
No, Bob.
1:15.
Still no Bob.
Bob was 18 minutes behind his time.
Hello there. And what do you mean coming in here at this time of day?
I'm very sorry, sir. It shan't be repeated. I was making rather merry yesterday, sir.
Oh, you were you? Well, I'll tell you what, my friend. I am not going to stand for this sort of thing any longer. And therefore, I am going to raise your salary.
A Merry Christmas to you, Bob. A merrier Christmas than I've given you in many a year.
We shall discuss your affairs this afternoon over a Christmas bowl of smoking bishop.
Now, make up the fires and buy yourself another coal scuttle before you dot another I, Bob Cratchit.
Scrooge was better than his word. He did it all and infinitely more. And to Tiny Tim, who did not die, he was a second father. He became as good a friend, as good a master, and as good a man as the good old city ever knew. He had no further intercourse with spirits, but lived upon the total abstinence principle ever after. And it was always said of him that he knew how to keep Christmas well. And may that truly be said of us, all of us. And so, as Tiny Tim observed,
Bravo, bravo.
Wonderful.
Bravo. Bravo, magnificent. Encore.
I'm thinking of encore. I'm thinking of
all the Jim Carrey and all the other Scrooges.
Jim Carrey. I hate Jim Carrey. Anyway.
I know, but he's great too.
Yeah, he did. Yeah, I know a lot of them have. It's a crowded
field. You're the best.
Thank you. I can't remember what I was going to say. Thank you.
Yeah, I think Dickens would be very happy.
I think
he has,
you know, I have that feeling. Sometimes I feel like I'm channeling him.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I'd say so.
Uh-huh.
I think, yeah,
I'd
feel that way.
Awesome.
Now I understand why it's everybody's favorite.
Yes.
Everybody what?
Something about...
It's everybody's favorite. It's obviously a story of transformation.
Yes, that's right. And there's a lot of stuff... it's a lot of padding in the original and in the movies and on the stage versions. There's a lot of padding, which obscures that point.
Yes,
it does.
Yeah.
But you, you know what my favorite line is?
Who?
My favorite line is...
Oh, yeah, what?
We live in a world of fools.
Yeah.
And I always point, what?
I always point to the audience when I say that. But listen, I've got to run. I have a show.
I know you do.
And
Well, we'll talk some more.
Yeah, we'll talk. But as I say, I have a show at 8, and I've got to get downtown and get it, you know, kind of set up.
Thank you for opening the whole Christmas season for us. It puts me in a spirit that I generally don't have until I hear this. So.
Well, that's funny. You know, a lot of people tell me that, and I'm really glad, but I don't really know why it is. You know, I'm just acting.
It helps.
It's just pleasure, happiness, Scrooge's repent.
Can I ask one question before you leave, Dee?
What?
Can I ask you one question?
Sure.
It seems to me, and I never got it before, because I've seen you do this a few times, that, you know, Jacob Marley was chained to a miserable existence. And it seems to me that what goes on there with Scrooge and all the different experiences of his that add and give him his transformation, that he has released Jacob Marley too.
Right. I often wonder about what became of Jacob Marley.
Yeah,
I really believe that he was released because of Scrooge's transformation.
Yeah, that's what I think too.
I think so too.
Yeah, that's what I think. It deserves a sequel, but it's also like the two of them are working on the, you know, like Marley is working on the spiritual plane and Scrooge is working on the physical plane, and so this is a complete circuit.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's very powerful, I think. If the story were to go on and make something of that, but on the other hand, you know, the way it is now, it's just this great arc. You know, it goes from darkness to light just very clearly, and I think it's better than Shakespeare, because in a Shakespeare tragedy, you know, they never recover.
No, they just die.
Yeah,
but this is universal. Everybody's fear of death.
Right, right. Yeah.
Yeah, it really does, because my gosh, you wonder why Scrooge would be so freaked out to look at his tombstone when he knows he's going to die, but it has to do with the fact that if he dies being the disgustingly hateful guy that he is, he's missing an opportunity.
Right, that's right. And then he also is facing a similar fate to Marley. Even worse.
Oh, yes, exactly. He's going to be just like Jacob Marley.
Yeah. No, worse, because he's had 7 more years to work on his chains. Marley says, you know, Your chains were as heavy and as long as mine 7 Christmas Eves ago. You've worked on them since.
Yeah, the guy did nothing.
How do you sustain it, all the laughter and everything, without passing out?
The story tells itself.
I guess so, but you put meaning to it, and vigor and vim.
Well, I don't know. I guess I don't know how that happens, but
if it's at all possible, I think this one is better than last year. I don't know exactly why, except that I think you're used to this venue more because, you know, you've been on doing plays here on the radio for 4 or 5 more times since last Christmas, last December the 15th. So I think you're more used to it, and it comes across better than it did last year.
I think it did, too.
Well, for one thing, the show has grown, and there's no question about it. I keep finding new stuff in it and new nuances. But beyond that, I think it has to do with the way I learned to hold the telephone.
Maybe.
It's technical,
exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. I think so, too.
I wrap my hand around the speaker part so that the outside stuff doesn't come in so much. Can you tell the difference between this talking here and this talking here?
Yeah, well, this
is the way I did the show. In other words, I cupped my hand around the receiver.
Right.
And that kept out that focused the focused the sound waves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So
it's a little that you could buy to do that.
Right.
That you would depend on the phone.
Yeah. Well, of course.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Doing it on the phone is a challenge in itself.
I'm sure.
But I really have to go. I hate.
I know you have to go. We really appreciate it, Dee. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Merry Christmas,
everyone.
We had a great
time. Yeah. Merry Christmas and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Yeah.
Happy Hanukkah.
Happy Hanukkah.
Thank you.
Happy holidays. Right.
Happy holidays.
We'll talk.
Yeah. Okay. We'll talk later.
Yes.
Bye-bye. Well, that was great, and thank you.
It really was. He is so talented. It's just, it's almost scary he's so talented.
Yes, he is. And, you know, J. Perk Peters at Lehigh said he should complete his master's degree in English.
Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. Well, he didn't do that.
Yes, Delaney and Joel were in graduate school together as well as Jala. They were all in graduate school together at Lehigh University in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania.
In what?
In English.
In English.
Yeah,
yes.
We took a course with J. Burke Stevens on Geoffrey Chaucer, the poet. And one day, Jala was, her name wasn't Jala then, it was Miss Camille Boda. She was asked, did you read something in Middle English? J. Burke Stevens asked her, and Jala said, no, I didn't.
Well, Chaucer did Delaney in, and that's why he couldn't finish graduate school. I mean, Chaucer just did him in. I don't know exactly why, but that's what did it.
I wrote my master's thesis on Chaucer.
How
well, he should have asked you for help.
I guess so. But he told J. Burke Stevens to go shove it.
Yeah. Isn't that exciting? That must have been a great experience.
Anyway.
You think that guy was a very good teacher, or do you think he was just kind of stuffy?
Well, I think he was a good teacher, but he was old-fashioned, and he wanted everybody to do it his way. And Delaney said, I'm not doing it your way. I want to go and be a writer. I want to go and be an actor.
Mm-hmm.
And J. Burke Stevens thought, Delaney is barking up the wrong tree.
Yeah. Well, I certainly admire anybody who can get a... Were you guys getting a master's degree, or were you getting a PhD in English? Was it a master's?
We're getting a master's degree.
Well,
wow.
That stuff is pretty hard, that's for sure.
It was fun. See, I enjoyed the classes more than Delaney.
Yeah, it sounds like it. And apparently Jala enjoyed it more than Delaney, too, because she finished.
Yes, she finished, too. And I finished. He didn't finish.
Yeah, he became...
The thing was, he was just smarter than the professor anyway. That was part of the issue.
Well,
yes.
What did you just say?
His IQ was higher than the professor's.
Probably.
Yeah. You know, deal with. It's hard to take orders from somebody you know is not as smart as you are.
Yes. Well, the problem was, too, Joan and Joel, was that it was the beginning of the 60s.
Ah.
Things were moving along much faster than anybody had ever anticipated. And, and when it comes to somebody telling him what to do, especially after being told for too long what to do, he just said, you know,
yeah,
screw it. Not doing it.
Yep.
Not doing it.
Well, look what's happened. J. Bush Stevens is dead. Delaney is doing Scrooge.
Yes. Yes. Well, I'm sure the professor had some redeeming qualities because everybody does.
He did.
No, and I think, too, they weren't prepared to have kids that in those days, I mean, if you're talking early 60s, they weren't used to students that would have opinions of their own.
No,
that's right.
And it was a different time.
He said,
oh, yes.
There were no nose rings, no tattoos, no computers, no iPhones, no iPods, no Facebook, no nothing.
And no thinking.
No.
You know, I don't know about y'all, but we were obedient.
Yes, we were.
Uh-huh.
And then, Kate, you came along a few years later, but my generation, we obeyed. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
And
well, I didn't talk back to my parents, but I did finally rebel pretty badly.
And I think you didn't, and I think that's not healthy.
Yeah.
You know, I think you need to at least state your piece.
Yes.
Yes.
Even if it doesn't agree with your parents' piece.
Right.
Yeah, they were a different generation, that's for
they
sure.
They were an entirely
obviously
different generation. It was just a different world.
Mm-hmm.
Entirely different world, and
actually, it was even before Kennedy was shot.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. And
yeah,
that kind of blew everybody's cover.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was the changing moment.
You said it. I was in Ames, Iowa, teaching English to Midwesterners, who said to me, "I think I told you this." They said, "We roll down our windows and we moon farmers."
Uh-huh. Yes, what were you? Is that what you were doing? What were you doing the moment that Kennedy was assassinated?
I was in my car in Ames, Iowa. It was raining. It was a Friday afternoon. I'll never forget it. And I just turned on the radio and I heard the news. And then I went to watch the TV and saw Lee Harvey Oswald shot by Ruby and the whole rest of the bit. And I started crying.
Yeah.
And how old were you, can I ask you?
Yeah, sure. I was 23 years old.
Yeah. So I'm between the two of you. But I was like 19 when all that happened. And, it was a terribly frightening time.
Oh, terribly.
The rug got pulled out from under us, you know.
Yeah.
And
well,
I don't think generations that's had that big a shock.
No.
Well, he was loved by the people.
Yes, he
and,
was.
And he had a problem with the people in his administration. I mean, he was a useful guy, and everybody around him were old farts. Excuse my French.
But he tried to get young people in there. And he had a beautiful wife.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody loved Jackie.
Yep.
It's an American
The children.
Mm-hmm. Oh, listen, I'm reading a book. Katie, I don't know if he's related to you. You've got to get, Joan, you've got to get this book, too. It's called Lincoln's Melancholy.
Ooh.
Oh.
How depression challenged the president and fueled his greatness. You know
that's
who it's
interesting.
By? Yes, it's well researched. And you know who it's by?
No.
Joshua Wolf Schenck, S-H-E-N-K.
Whoa.
Can
you believe it? Well, when the first show that you were on with us, you mentioned that there were famous people who were had major depression, and you mentioned that Lincoln was one of them.
Yeah.
And
melancholy was the word to describe it in those days, but in reality, he was pretty depressed.
Yes, he was, but they didn't call it that.
Yes.
In this astonishing and illuminating book, Joshua Wolf Schenck reveals the deep melancholy that pervaded Abraham Lincoln's life and its influence on his mature character. Mired in personal suffering as a young man, Lincoln forged a hard path toward mental health. His coping strategies and depressive insight ultimately helped the 19th to 16th president find the strength that he and America needed to overcome the nation's greatest turmoil. Drawing on 7 years of research, Schenck offers a nuanced revelatory perspective on Lincoln and his legacy. I highly recommend this book.
Wow.
You know what I'm thinking, too, is with our TV and Internet, all of that, you couldn't get by with that now.
Oh, no, mm-hmm. Lincoln would never be president.
Mm-mm. But at that point, he had enough quiet time to keep himself where he needed to be.
Yes, exactly.
Same with FDR. Mm-hmm. He would never have been able to be president because of his handicap and so forth. And they were able to keep that off away from people's... When they saw him or heard him, they weren't seeing him.
Right.
But, you know, they weren't really seeing the man.
Right. And now we have Sarah Palin. Can you believe it?
Yeah,
I like her, y'all. That,
yeah,
her,
I know.
I like her.
Yeah, I well, she is defining different... She's bringing out different facets of our national psyche. And
she serves a purpose, but she's an idiot. Even my psychiatrist said, God help us if she ever becomes a person.
No, I don't. I think that more than anything, she's a massage. What do you call it? Somebody who loves themselves to the exclusion of. They are. She is really a narcissist. That's it. And I don't believe that she's really going to be running for president. I think that she is very much into doing what she's doing and creating a brand for herself and making millions and millions of dollars in the process.
Oh, yes, she is.
So I don't really think she's going to run for president.
No, I don't think the Republicans are that stupid.
I don't either. I think that they aren't, and I'm not against women running for president or anything like that, and I'm just trying to be fair here. And I think that she is not really trying to run for president. I think that there's a whole – she's just as narcissistic as Warren Beatty is, really.
Let's have Warren Beatty for president.
Warren Beatty was running for president. He's one of the top narcissists ever known, you know. He hits the top 10, but I think so does Sarah Palin. So I think the two of them should do a movie together or something. That would be really interesting.
But Beatty is married to a brilliant actress, Annette Bening. She's brilliant.
Well, so is Warren Beatty, you know.
She's getting out a good message, though, about getting the government off of our backs. So.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. And, you know, it's interesting that I have that in common with the Tea Party. I think things should go from state to state, you know. Whole thing, health care,
will never be decided.
Yeah, it should never be decided by the federal government.
No.
Yeah, but don't you think it was a landmark decision when they did the don't ask, don't tell bit?
Of course I do. Of course I do. And it had to be done by legislation because they could never turn that back.
No.
And last evening,
never should have happened in the first place.
That's exactly right.
Yeah. It's like we were talking about it today, and I said, you know, gays served in the World War II, and nobody said anything or cared or anything. It was never asked. What? Whose business is that?
Exactly.
Right.
I mean, it's just absurd. It just wouldn't have come up.
No.
I know.
It wouldn't have been a part of the... It's not their business.
No,
no, it isn't. I don't know if anybody here... Have you ever heard of Rachel Maddow? You probably both have heard of Rachel Maddow. She is doing three shows in Manhattan. The live shows in Manhattan. She had one last night. Tonight she'll have one, and tomorrow night, and it's broadcast on MSNBC. But last night she had four lesbian, gay, transgender, you know, whatever, bisexual people on the show who were military people, and it was really interesting because they were all out of the military because of either being outed or being discriminated against or what have you. And these four people were absolutely dedicated to the country, passionate about serving the military. And a lot of these, one of the, or at least two of these people had come from military backgrounds, military families, you know, so it went generations for them. And these four people were strategic in the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell. So she had brought on these activists who... her name is Rachel Maddow. I'm sorry to say I don't know the names of the four military people, but they joined forces, and between the four of them, they were responsible for the repeal. And the one guy was just about to commit suicide. He was so depressed. He was so, you know, harassed, probably bullied. These people were bullied in the military because it came out that they were gay, and he had to leave the military for one reason or another, and he was just devastated. One, he was about to commit suicide when he got a call from a World War II veteran. He said, please do not give up the fight. I was gay in the military, but I couldn't say a word because of obvious reasons. And please keep up the fight. You'll be saving the lives of many young people. And he that was when he not only saved this young man's life from committing suicide, but that he got the guy to continue his fight for the repeal of the legislation. It was a very moving show. I actually just broke down and cried. It was so intense.
It's Rachel Maddow.
Maddow. And Rachel herself is a lesbian, and she has a tremendous show on MSNBC. Do you get that, Ray? Do you get MSNBC?
Yes, we do.
Well, you must see that show. It's on 9 o'clock every night, Monday through Friday. She's on all the news shows. You know, she's just a really whether you agree with Rachel or not, once again, the same with Sarah Palin. These people have a confidence about them that is so wonderful to see, that people really believe in themselves enough to get up into the public, before the public eye like that, and tell people who they are. And it took a while for MSNBC to hire Rachel, because I guess probably because of her, she is left-leaning, you know, and also because she is obviously a lesbian. She never hid it. But finally they gave her her own show, and they never regretted that, because she's gracious. She sometimes goes off on people, but not always. And she often, she's fair, really. And she's a human being, for God's sake, you know.
Yeah, well, I must listen to her.
She's on tonight. You have to watch it because another least favorite people amongst the population is Michael Moore will be on the show tonight, and she'll be interviewing him.
Oh, I like him. I like Michael Moore.
I love Michael Moore, but a lot of people don't because he's so I once again, I would have to admire him no matter what because of his confidence. You know, he doesn't somebody like him who isn't the best looking guy on the block, he absolutely doesn't care. He is himself first and foremost. It's like that play you were telling me about, Joel, where the person stands up and shouts, "I am who I am." Exactly. I am who I am. Anybody who can do that, I admire, no matter what their politics or whatever. I have to admire it. Yeah.
Except for someone like Sarah Palin, she doesn't know her ass from her elbow when she's going around saying this and that, and my daughter diggles on Dancing with the Stars, and she smiles, and she says I could beat Obama, and her confidence, well, she's an asshole as far as I'm concerned.
I know. But anyway, you have to respect that some people don't agree with that. So, and once again, we are on the air. I actually lost my cool about the torture that the United States supports torture the other night on the radio. And I must say that if I could, I would go back and edit that out. But anyway, like I said, we're all human. We have to express ourselves, and we have to accept each other. You know, it's like the most important thing about Don't Ask, Don't Tell, and about the military, first of all, integrating the ranks for all people of color, and then allowing women in, and now allowing, gay, lesbian, transgender, and bisexual people in. The military is taking a stand, is actually leading the way, has always led the way in this country for accepting other people. I'm not a great fan of the military. Everybody who knows me knows that. But I am very in support of this. I think it's tremendous.
Yes, I do too. Well, should we go back to Scrooge and Christmas Carol or just say goodbye?
Yeah. Whatever you all want to do. I'm happy with what happened tonight, and I feel transformed. How does that sound?
That was a wonderful presentation.
It was.
It was. It really was.
His brother's really talented.
I love him. Yes.
He's very talented.
Well, he needs... I'm surprised that he's not bigger publicly.
Well, it's very hard.
Rather than
very
low.
Very hard, because there's so many actors out there. Very, very hard.
Competition.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
It's very hard. I mean, he's not in New York. He's not in Los Angeles. He's in Norfolk, Virginia.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. My brother has always been a dreamer. He's a dreamer. He's a lot of the times he's been dreaming instead of his ambition hasn't really taken the forefront. He's very mystical. He's a very sensitive guy. And in this day and age, in our generation, the baby boomers, I bet a lot of us become famous in our later years, very possibly.
Well, I just finished the first act of my play. Yesterday.
That's what I'm saying. That's exactly what I'm saying. So keep at it, and I expect to see you on Broadway. Hey, this is the end of this because we have 1 minute remaining, and we might as well just sign off. I love you all.
Love you, and Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas. I'm going to play some music, and we'll all stay in touch.
Yes,
good night.
Good night. Love you, Joan. Bye-bye.
Bye.
out in a minute. Love you. Love you, Yuli.